I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy hoy everybody, welcome to Talking Simpsons, a Twilighty show about that zone. I am your host, Bob Dervish of Declension Mackey, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
It's Henry Gilbert, and this will all sound better coming out of Paul Anger.
Everything does, and who else?
Lousy smarch host Chris Antista.
Oh boy, the smarch weather is really getting to me. And today's episode is Treehouse of Horror 6.
Remember the story, where newlyweds on our way to Earth Capital.
Shazbot.
Oh.
Mork and Mindy reference.
That feeling when you get a reference in 1995.
I'm sad that I got that. Today's episode aired on October 29th, 1995. And as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real world history.
Oh, Shazbot Bobby, Destruction Derby tears it up on PS1. The world was introduced to Jason Lee and Kevin Smith's box office smash, Mallrats. And the Baseball Network takes a bow.
Wow.
I wanted to explain that a little more because I don't like
because
sports.
Of the strike?
Yeah. I don't like sports, but I do love media history. The Braves won or something. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, I cared in the time. But, yes.
But that CBS was in such financial peril, they had to give away the rights to baseball. So NBC and ABC and the Major League Baseball Corporation teamed up for 1 year to make the Baseball Network, because up to that point, the Major League Baseball wasn't producing its own show. It's like their show was produced by ABC and NBC. So it's the first World Series to air on two networks.
Wow.
Like one game NBC, next game ABC. And it's still to this day the last World Series to air on ABC. But the Baseball Network, there's a shitty logo and theme. You might hear it on a Laser Time.
Boy,
scene.
I don't remember that at all.
It was 1 year and the player strike totally like bombed it.
I obviously didn't see Mallrats in theaters.
Nobody did.
Anyone did.
Nobody likes Mallrats.
But I think a year later I watched both it and Clerks back to back on VHS. And it blew my mind. Now it's easy to make fun of Kevin Smith, but
it was in a world
I was at the right age for it.
My
for
dad
sure.
showed me Clerks the second it came out on video. I guess he heard it about it on NPR. He was always ahead of the game because of NPR. And Laser Time Network, we're rediscovering Kevin Smith stuff. We're doing Clerks cartoon commentaries. We just did a commentary for the Clerks movie because Kevin Smith gets shit on a ton.
But
Mallrats, I was like, if someone told me the Clerks guy made another movie, I would have gone. That wasn't in the Mallrats marketing.
No.
There were none of the same characters.
Mallrats was supposed to be a titty raunch fest of the 80s for the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it was supposed to be.
That's what it was marketed as.
It really was.
I was so disappointed the guy from Clerks made another movie and nobody told me? And I love Mallrats.
I will say, Clerks does hold up.
Clerks holds up.
Please don't rewatch Mallrats.
Mallrats
does not.
So my message to you want to see something that doesn't hold up. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Oh boy!
But it's wonderful because like it'd be like making a Marvel movie, but you didn't tell anybody what any character's name was or like who they are or what this joke means. It is a meaningless movie with the score from Beethoven.
I had read every Askewniverse comic book though, so I got every reference.
I mean,
in it.
Yeah.
And once it was over, I was like, I can close this chapter in my life now. I feel safe in this. I'm in my mid-20s now. I'm kind of good.
I loved it at the time because it was like it rewarded you for paying attention to this whole universe. But how did this come in a no one can follow this at all. It doesn't make any sense.
But back to Mallrats. There has never been a bigger Mallrats fan than Bob Mackey. I had
really?
A framed Mallrats poster. Mallrats was my first DVD, and I was never more disappointed when, if you don't remember, Mallrats had a huge amount of footage cut out of it.
And like
an entire
movie.
Subplot. And I was never more excited to see that footage. It is all a Jeremy London subplot, and he is the worst actor in the 90s. He does he work anymore?
I don't think
brother,
so.
His identical twin brother, I think, still
I would
in.
Quite honestly think that Jeremy London was like, this is Hollywood Babylon, but that Stifler from American Pie is said to be was David Geffen's like houseboy at one time, and that's why he got to be in movies. I would not be surprised if Jeremy London wasn't just some other kept man of an executive they just shoved into movies, and that's why you don't see him or Stifler in movies anymore.
Well, they do make fun of his acting on the Mallrats commentary, that
he's
he acts
terrible.
Like a chicken. He's always crossing his arms and like darting his head in and out. It's weird.
Though
you gotta watch his tiger beat hair move every time he does it.
I recall watching
I have that haircut now.
I wanted to stop in the middle of the
sentence. I recall watching the TV versions of it because they had to add scenes to it to make it longer, so it was like seeing the deleted scenes
God.
But in that one, they had to redo, I would say, 40% of the dialogue. Yeah.
Oh, and Jason Mewes didn't show up.
Jason Mewes didn't fucking show up.
It's a different guy.
He was a drug addict at
yeah.
the time.
It's a different guy.
In fact,
hey man, this is Noochie Boochies.
During some of those Clerks cartoons, you could tell Jason Mewes is like in the middle of a bender. It's like,
yeah. That's right, Silent Bob.
Kind of.
That's right, Silent yeah. Bob. Yeah. Best damn smoke, Silent Bob.
Cartoon is fascinating. We do that on our Patreon, patreon.com/lasertime. And I think mm-hmm. this speaks to the need that Matt and I... Do people want to celebrate Kevin Smith's library at this point, and like, yes
yeah.
we do.
Yeah,
I would, well, for one thing, as a professional podcaster, I can't really throw stones at Kevin Smith for giving up films mostly mm-hmm. to be a podcaster. But second, my issue with Kevin Smith now is just that he's just became like a dad who's just like, no, my daughter is the greatest thing ever. It's like, it's cool to take pride, but she shouldn't, maybe not all your movies.
Yeah. It's like, you don't need to cast your wife and your daughter. It's like the family movie. Sorry, my family.
I'll say it a billion times if we go into it further. I think he got a lot of hate because I think everybody thought what he did was easy. Mm-hmm. And I know it looks easy.
It makes it look easy.
And I know you think you can be Kevin Smith. So my mm-hmm. question to you is, why aren't you?
Yeah.
Why don't you do something?
Yeah.
Why don't you make something?
What hurt Kevin Smith for me as a fan was seeing The Evening with Kevin Smith's, which I actually have. I do love them. They are good. But that is when it finally hit me, like, oh, every character in a Kevin Smith movie is Kevin Smith talking to himself all of the time.
Yes.
Especially Randall. And when I...
Come on, Henry.
When I saw Clerks 2 and saw Randall say an exact speech from Evening with Kevin Smith about Lord of the Rings, I was like, come on, dude. Like,
what your problem with Kevin Smith is, Henry?
last thing I'll say about Mallrats.
You're a cigarette.
I have one more thing to say.
The last thing I will say is that one of my favorite things about Mallrats is on the, I bet it was Laserdisc commentary mm-hmm. for Clerks.
Oh, yes.
Is recorded during production of Mallrats, and like the executive who's working on Mallrats comes in there and is like fluffing up Kevin Smith. Oh. And Kevin Smith is just like, Mallrats is going to be so huge. I'm like, Kevin Smith is so full of himself about Mallrats. It's such a crystalline point in time.
Matt, it's a great commentary. I thought you were going to mention the same anecdote Matt told me, because I think the Chasing Amy Laserdisc, the first sentence in the commentary is, fuck DVD.
Yes, and on the DVD version, he recorded a segment saying I was wrong and apologizing for that. I will say, though, it's going on a bit long, but
oh, yeah.
My problem with Kevin Smith is I was a big fan of him, but what frustrated me about him was... And a lot of creators fall into this trap, especially if you grew up in the 90s, is that he insults himself first so you can't. Mm-hmm. And I find that just to be a very self-defeating attitude that I'm kind of sick of now. It's just like, fucking have confidence in what you do.
No, I will not.
Kevin Smith should have confidence. Yes. So should you, Chris.
Yes.
But
I wasn't talking directly to you, Chris, but I'm saying everyone out there, be proud of what you do.
You know, I said I had my last Mallrats story, but...
this is now turning into the Mallrats Laser Time. Let's just stop right here.
It speaks to the need.
I had the soundtrack to it.
Oh, yeah.
And listened to it 8 million times.
Oh, me too.
A skeleton in a suit and tie tells us what we ought to buy. Bag of cocaine into your heart. Support your conscience. That's a start.
You only need 3 chords for any song, really.
Yep. Yeah.
And I paid $18 for that CD in 1998.
The CD cost me more than the VHS back in those days.
Wow.
As a Weezer fanboy, I loved hearing any Weezer B-side.
And Suzanne was the name of the monkey. Yep.
Okay, so we
with.
Definitely need a Kevin Smith episode of Laser Time.
Yeah,
for sure.
All right, SOS.
Simpsons podcast.
I guess
we're
forced to talk about a Treehouse of Horror episode. Blech.
Yes,
a really
those
good
are
one.
Never good. No, yes,
a really excellent one.
This is quite an excellent Treehouse.
It is jam packed with lots of stories. In fact, the intro is just Krusty as a headless horseman. There were going to be more scenes with Simpsons characters as different horror villains. Mm-hmm. Like I think Ned Flanders was going to be Leatherface.
Oh,
and things like that, but it's like, no, we only have time for one thing, because these are all stories with a beginning, a middle, and an end, not just like a pastiche of jokes about
super
things.
Speed.
Yeah.
Just want to say, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, for me, is always a Halloween must-watch. It's really, really great.
Which version?
The Ichabod Crane. Oh, sorry, the Disney one.
Oh, okay. Yes,
Ichabod and Mr. Toad.
Yeah. Also, this is the first episode with a writing credit from Steve Topkins.
That's right.
Who I wanted to go over a little bit, like, you heard me, Steve Topkins. That's a critic reference out there listening to Talking Critic, folks. But that Steve Topkins was fresh off the critic. Mm-hmm. He had worked on seasons 1 and 2 and now would work on The Simpsons from season 7 and 8. And he actually has no full episode writing credit for his entire time there. He only wrote segments in either Treehouses or 22 Shorts or the spinoff Showcase. He never did a full written episode, but Oakley Weinstein, like, say that he was on the level of George Meyer for his contributions to those seasons.
Yeah, he's sort of one of those guys that's just in the room making scripts better. And he is one of the few openly Christian Simpsons writers. They cite, but it didn't make the shows worse.
No. He also worked on the PJs, the Bernie Mac
that's
show.
Right.
Now on
Two
Hulu.
And a Half Men.
I love the PJs.
It was good.
No, it was a good show. It was what they produced it in, like, it's a very segmented show. I didn't realize until, I think it was Bob pointed out on one of our things, that they had to produce it so far in advance. And I think he might work on the Danny Matheson show on
the Netflix
show.
Hit the Ranch.
Yes, yeah, it's one of those. Well, now it's a controversial show, but
to quote Mother Simpson, I don't know who that is.
Yes, exactly. well, he's Scientology's own felon.
Oh,
Danny Matheson.
Okay. Oh,
hi,
yes.
From that 70s show.
Yep. Yes. Okay. sex pervert and
sex pervert and Ashton Kutcher friend. That show, The Ranch, is just one of those shows that you see on the Netflix list, like, oh, I guess that exists.
Did you have to check every box for entertainment? Nobody wanted this fucking show.
They are going into the red just to have a show, a season premiere every week of something.
I think we could get a show on Netflix. Yeah.
I read a great argument about, I haven't wanted, did anybody else watch the Cloverfield Netflix thing?
I did. No. It's awful. It's not awful. It's just like, sorry, I couldn't stop talking about it, because like, how much did Netflix pay for that? Because essentially you have to pay whatever that was going to make at the box office, but I think that's why they bought it, because I don't think it would have done very well.
I saw someone on Twitter say that this is just now an excuse to shine up what would have been a direct-to-DVD movie and say, like, no, it's the prestige of
they
Netflix.
They just, as of this recording, they just bought a Universal movie. They were like, we're not releasing this in theaters.
Yeah.
And so they Netflix bought it.
Now, Bright,
and because of Bright, they don't care if the movie's good, just that it's new.
Bright could have gone in theaters. That one could have been released in theaters. Wouldn't have done well, but it could have. Well, who's to say?
Have I podcasted in a while?
But okay, that opening of all the Simpsons hanging at once.
That's
like,
great.
That's a gruesome but great opening.
They hang a baby in the beginning of the episode. Yeah. I was like,
she has to
suck
her pacifier. I wonder if they had a rule of like, Maggie can't appear that dead.
Yeah.
Like, not the baby. An 8-year-old we can hang, but a baby.
That baby did nothing wrong, except for original sin.
And I also got to give Matt Groening credit. Every year he comes up with multiple nicknames for himself. Well, meanwhile, it's always James L. Brooks and Sam Sayonara Simon.
Oh, that Sayonara means a lot more now, doesn't it?
It means way more things. It also means, like, goodbye, women in this office. You're not going.
One thing, though, I think after this season, they cut back on how long the Halloween names could be, because it's just this huge, glowy green font across the screen, kind of like ruining certain shots.
Yes. All right, so Attack of the 50-Foot Eyesores.
Yes.
Written by John Swartzwelder. It's his first Halloween segment he's done since 2.
Wow.
He hadn't worked on a Treehouse since Treehouse 2. But this one is a perfect fit for him because he got his start in writing in the jingle world. Like, unlike Steve Tompkins, for example, who, again, was another Harvard jerk, Swartzwelder came up through just being an oddball that other comedy writers really liked. But
yeah, I think George Meyer got him onto SNL, too. Mm-hmm. But the ad agency in this segment is named after the ad agency he worked at.
Ah, it was so specific.
Yeah.
You had to think it had to be based on something.
I was like, is this a joke? But it's not. It's just where he worked.
And we get our first introduction to Lard Lad.
Ah, the Miracle Mile. Where value wears a neon sombrero and there's not a single church or library to offend the eye. There it is! The chain that put the fat in fat Southern sheriffs. I want a colossal donut, just like the one on the sign.
Don't!
Nuts! That's false advertising!
Sorry, sir. No refunds.
I paid for a colossal donut, and I'm gonna get a colossal donut.
You don't scare us.
So I did about an hour of research on this segment alone, looking up what every mascot is a reference to. This one is the most obvious.
You find
this
Vegas Vic.
Vegas Vic, yes, and his many clones. But this is Lard Lad is actually Bob's Big Boy.
Mm-hmm.
It started
the
as
a mixture of that California donut.
Yes.
Place.
I forget what that is.
Big Boy. Like,
yeah.
I've never been to a Big Boy.
Oh, they were in Ohio.
I saw them on a news segment because, like, it was somebody decrying the fall of America. Because Big Boys had been around since, like, the 50s?
The 20s.
The 20s.
It started as Bob's Pantry in the 20s. It became Bob's Big Boy in 1937. And the original design was designed by Warner Brothers artists.
Because every store had a statue. And all of a sudden in the 80s, kids started defacing Bob's big boy statues.
No.
And they were never this big. They're like your height.
Boy, well, that's so... That big boy design so fits like the early Merry Melodies, like little fat kids who sing stupid songs.
He looks like the Animaniacs version of Bosco.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. Buddy. who is real. He's a real character, too. So there are many big boy designs. If you go to the wiki, you can find out a lot about Big Boy, and I did. Mm-hmm. And this version of Lard Lad holding the donut aloft is a parody of the 1956 version. He's changed subtly over the years. In some cases, he's not holding anything. He's sort of just like running. So maybe it's like, we're not going to make your kids fat. This little big boy's active.
You're active. He's not a fat little guy who eats burgers. Like this, I knew Big Boy was a reference because you'd see it in tons of stuff. In The Critic, they had one of him eating the burgers dressed as Big Boy.
And belching.
But I didn't know Big Boy as the name of it until Austin Powers. Like the classic scene, like his... Well, Dr. Evil's spaceship was a big boy.
Yes.
And Clint Howard had to explain, like, well, actually, big boys are making a resurgence these days.
I forgot about that joke.
Yes. Yeah, it's easy to forget the other spaceship that looks like a giant Johnson or Woody from Austin Powers.
But I know I've never been to one of these in person. I've never been to a Bob's Big Boy.
It's your garden variety. It might as well be a Shoney's or an Applebee's or a
greasy
whatever.
Spoon Americana.
Yeah.
Who are the other guys?
Yeah, I want to get... Let's get this out of the way now.
How about when we get to them, I'll explain them.
Oh, all
yeah,
right.
Sorry.
But I do want to say, like, Lard Lad, he does debut in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is a non-canon episode that introduces kind of a major part of Springfield.
It's shocking they didn't have a name for a donut place in the Simpsons world until this point. The times they eat donuts, they never had a name for it.
If you watch the new episodes of The Simpsons, that Lard Lad is there to let you know. He's an iconic piece of Springfield.
You
right
go
next
to the Springfield in Orlando Universal, you're seeing Lard Lad.
And in video games.
Mm-hmm.
In video games, Lard Lad became a huge... thing.
He's
it's how you know you're in Springfield.
And this was the first time I noticed a continuity thing that works, in that if you're asking yourself, well, why would Homer have never gone to this donut place before to know they don't sell colossal donuts? Mm-hmm. There's a grand opening sign when he arrives. So that's how Homer has never been to Lard Lad.
I don't know if we've seen that Miracle Mile since this episode.
No. I love that intro, like, to offend the eye. But yes, Homer steals the big donut, and we get a pretty cool little moment here.
I got your donut, Lard Lad, and what are you going to do about it?
Just those sounds. The sounds of the metal and plastic or plaster moving is so perfect.
It's really great sound design. And on the commentary, David Silverman says, they didn't let us use the Godzilla scream in Monsters, Inc. And David Cohen said, that's because you asked. We didn't ask.
Yeah, I wonder about that, how true that is, because... Toho is very litigious.
Yeah.
Though in 95,
you know, it took them 2 years to show America Shin Godzilla.
That's true.
Yeah.
So in 95, though, my personal theory, I'm not a Godzilla expert like Brett Elston, a sometime guest on the show. In 95, Toho would have definitely been in bed with Fox to work on Godzilla America.
Oh, you're right. That was 97.
That was 97 or 98 release.
That was probably just
a Sony deal. It's pretty early. I could also just see Simpson saying, like, hey, who cares? So, like, we can just use it as TV.
I think the roar comes from a rubber glove run across the strings of a stand-up bass and then played backwards.
That's awesome.
And I think that's where... So you could just ask Alf Clausen to do it.
Anybody can make it. You're not even stealing their thing. Mm-hmm. I would think perhaps that Pixar and Disney in a film would be more worried about a lawsuit than Fox on a TV show, perhaps. I felt bad for Silverman. It was also funny to hear Silverman on that mention his Pixar work, because this episode, we'll get to it later, but this episode must have been his warm-up for working in 3D animation, which he would later do full-time when he abandoned The Simpsons for Pixar.
And then he came crawling back.
But I also love just Homer just drinking beer in his underwear in a giant donut.
He's drinking a 40, I think, for the first time.
It's so big. It has to be a 40. I wondered if it was a 40 or any kind of malt liquor, but could also just be a poorly drawn Duff beer.
I like to think that they gave him a 40 just to he can revel in his decadence.
It makes it even more dingy that he's drinking a 40 after robbing.
In his underwear.
Homer, where did you get that?
Get what?
The giant donut.
Well, I acquired it legally. You can be sure of that.
I think they brought it in through the same door Extopolopple Kettle came in through.
Oh, that's true.
I was going to say it.
How else could that thing get in?
But yeah, I love seeing all the little jokes about the Zip Boys, who are the Pep Boys, and
I've got Pep Boy wisdom to share.
And the giant Duff Beer guy, who is like the Marlboro Man, he's kind of like the Las Vegas smiling cowboy, isn't he?
So let me get into it. The Zip Boys, you're right, Henry, a parody of the Pep Boys. They were formally named that in 1923. I think it was just like another name before that. And they are caricatures of the original owners, Manny, Mo, and Jack, and they go by those nicknames because two of them are extremely Jewish, and you don't want to be a business owner in the 1920s advertising how Jewish you are for some reason.
I can't buy this muffler from a Jew. He's gonna Jew me out of mufflers.
I think one of them is named like Emmanuel Goldstein or something. Like, it is the most Jewish name.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yes, and what was the other one? Vegas Vic.
Vegas Vic.
So we have
that's
Vegas Vic. I want to say that they were inspired by a Miller High Life commercial at the time where he comes to life then he drinks with a large woman neon sign. But in that commercial, the people aren't celebrating. They're like, That cowboy stuff is so corny, but then he's like, I'm actually cool. In the Simpsons, they're like, yeah, let's party with a giant cowboy.
I drink white trash beer. Did you?
I love the like friction you can feel of him crushing the people under his beer bottle.
Oh, did we say the Planter's Peanut?
Oh, well, yeah. Then there's Professor Peanut.
I think it's Bill Hader now.
Is he the official peanut guy?
I think he was the last time I heard him
talk. Bill Hader deserves it. He needs to cash in. He does so many cool things. Let him make some money.
So Vegas Vic, erected in 1951 at the Pioneer Club in Vegas. Do not confuse him with Wendover Will or River Rick, who are clones built to capitalize on the success of Vegas Vic.
I see. And so I've seen the clone and thought it was the real Vegas Vic.
People had made giant neon signs before, but never really a person, and that's why I was like, that's pretty cool. We don't have the internet yet, and I'll stare at this giant cowboy for a while.
Also, the amount of people who are murdered by a giant thing in this is so callously and humorously. It absolutely reminds me of King Homer, especially when Professor Peanut eats the people in the car.
There's more death in this episode than there has been recently in Treehouse of Horror. Just so many casual deaths happen.
That's true. They are pretty cool. And I just like the animation all over the place is great in this. The scratching of the Zip Boys' heads on the ground here.
Fellas, where you going at this hour? Hey, don't scratch up them heads.
Good morning, everybody. Panic is gripping Springfield as giant advertising mascots rampage through the city. Perhaps it's part of some daring new ad campaign, but what new product could justify such carnage? A cleanser? A fat-free fudge cake that doesn't let you down in the flavor department like so many others? Let me go! No! Stop! No!
Oh, gruesome.
This is my one problem with this episode. It is a good act break, but Kent is obviously murdered here. He's dead.
he comes back
for the act break.
I totally forgot about
that.
Everybody
does.
The crazy old man got his stuff together, and now he runs a Pep Boys or Zip Boys or whatever.
It's impressive he's running the Zip Boys. I guess they realize, like, well, who's the funniest voice to hear demanding the Zip Boys come back?
Who's a funny voice?
I like the Please Stand By Dog, but it's not to me as funny as Crazy Kent or Drunk Cameraman. Those are my preferred Please Stand By.
And there's no clip for it, but the Red Devil Realty, I think he's an amalgam of a bunch of devil mascots. There's a great Mr. Show sketch where it's like Anton LaVey is complaining about there are too many devil mascots for innocuous products. It's making Satan look bad.
I did love that one. That episode ended with them just dubbing over an old cartoon.
Like Little Lulu or whatever.
Yes, yeah. I gotta say, this joke makes me laugh more than ever.
Oh, me too.
But also, this joke hurts more than ever now, too, of a policeman casually shooting the wrong person.
It was funnier 20 years ago.
Ah, they're not so tough.
Chief, that wasn't a monster. That was the captain of the high school basketball team.
He was turning into a monster, though.
Yeah, it has a different flavor in 2018, but
I'm betting the writers were just so excited of like, well, we can't have him actually kill people in a normal episode, but let's have him shoot and murder a tall person. I wonder if he was the son of very tall man.
Oh my God! No wonder he can only afford a small car. His son is dead.
I find nothing comical about this situation.
We'll get to him soon.
Also, though, turning into a monster is the actual defense that in real cop shootings.
That's true.
Like, well, how did I know that 12-year-old boy wasn't turning into a giant, scary black man who would kill me?
He was in the middle of a marijuana rampage.
Oh, we gotta laugh or else we'll cry.
Yes.
Like that's so. Then, speaking of sociopathic behavior, Homer is ready to kill Ned and Mo. This is some real jerk-ass Homer here.
Hello? Yes? Oh, if you're looking for that big donut of yours, Flanders has it. Just smash open his house. He came to life. Good for him.
Help me, Lord!
I told you, Flanders has it! Or Mo. Go kill Mo.
Homer, just give him the donut. Once he has it, that will be the end of all this horror.
Well, okay. If it'll end horror.
Oh.
Don't you ever get tired of being wrong all the time.
Sometimes.
Oh, poor Marge. I also think killing the dog may be a step too far.
You don't know that he's dead.
That dog is dead. That dog is dead.
But it wasn't clear it was Santos El Helper.
That's like, true.
It was just a brown dog.
I don't like it.
Wow, brown. I mean, animal violence, they've murdered so many people, but animal violence is harder to take.
Yeah.
That's true. I also love the little callback of the Zip Boys pushing their heads around in shopping carts.
That's really cute. And because of Lard Lad's rampage, Lisa sees where he came from, the ad company who made him.
I also love that in a previous treehouse, that would have been the end of like, okay, we gave it back, it's over. Like in a treehouse one or two, that would have been the end of the segment, and that they like fuck you over, like, no, that's not the end. Like they love killing things too much. And Lisa goes to the ad agency, which you said was named after
Van Brunt and Churchill. And there are two great little jokes in the background. One is easy to read. 50 million cigarette smokers can't be wrong. The other one, gag. I needed to go to the internet because it's so illegible. It says, if you like Ike, you'll love Laramie Septic Tanks. So I guess the Laramie Company makes cigarettes and septic tanks. But I love Harry Shearer's very jowly ad exec, monsters.
Well, and then he's such a proto-madman type. Like, he is totally pulled from the era that Oakley and Weinstein love, which is 60s-type dudes. Like, he likes he's from the 60s ad exec who would have been on Bewitched or something.
Oh, for sure,
just
yeah.
All these guys have just... But he's gotten older, and when I think of what it's like to write a song, I do think of, like, don't watch the monsters.
So can we talk about Paul Anka?
Got a little... Before we hear his tune.
A little bio. So he's still alive, born in 1941. Mm-hmm. He's on the show because on the episode Grandpa Versus Sexual Inadequacy, Marge calls Homer Rex Harrison and Paul Anka rolled into one. And Paul Anka was like, thank you, I want to be on the show now. So they got him on the show thanks to that. Mm-hmm. He broke out in the late 50s with the song I Confess, but I think the reason the Simpsons writers wanted him on the show because he had a comeback in the 70s, and they loved cheesy 70s stuff in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And he wrote the song She's Having My Baby. So what a
having
lovely
my
way
baby.
And I think I might have a clip of that if you want to hear it.
I do.
Having my baby. What a lovely way of saying how much you love me. Having my baby.
So cornball. I
Freakly
love it.
Crap.
What a lovely way of saying what you're thinking of me.
Having a child, I guess, is a way to say
have
what
you heard
of.
You heard the duet versions of that where a man and a woman sing to one another?
Yeah.
I'm having your baby.
He also wrote the Sinatra classic My Way, which is forever poisoned by being the first dance of our current president and first lady as president.
What?
And
you
he
haven't
did.
Seen that? I know I couldn't stand to watch more than 2 minutes of footage from Inauguration Day, but his big dance was to My Way, and when... It comes to, I did it my way. He then turns to where he knows a camera is, looks away from his wife, and is singing along to it. It's like, this has destroyed this song for me forever.
I don't like it. So, the most famous song I think that he wrote is this next clip right here. That's
what?
Right.
What?
Oh. And as Chris has pointed out, every talk show has to ape this.
Yes.
I could make so much money off of just this thing.
I never get tired of pointing that out. Because that music has now become synonymous with every talk show.
And it really has. A big band.
But this was just the kind of music Johnny Carson liked.
Yeah.
There was no music in any talk show.
So they all have to do. Well, when they try to do counter that, I think people are just like, nah, that's weird. I don't like that.
And that's actually a big band version of the song Toot Sweet, which I have a clip of here.
Toot Sweet?
Paul Anka wrote this and they adapted it. It's getting there.
Wow.
Man, I want a cocktail now.
Oh my goodness.
But a little shout out for Paul Anka. I think a lot of younger fans would recognize him. He's in Austin Powers, I think the first two. Ladies and gentlemen, he plays the song. He comes
He
breaks the fourth
wall. That's right.
Shout out to my Canadian animation fans. George and the Christmas Star is an ancient and forgotten Christmas special.
Yeah.
And he wrote all these. He's fantastic at authentic cheese and all these horribly un-Christmassy, wonderful 70s jams for this lost 80s animation Christmas special.
I, as a kid, listened to oldie stations all the time, so I knew his 50s stuff the best, including, like, Diana, or Push Your Head on My Shoulder.
What put him on the map for me is the Mystery Science Theater episode, Girls Town. It is one of the most underrated episodes of that series. Watch it. It's got Mamie Van Doren.
They just put it out on the last DVD set.
Oh, it's so good.
They held out so long because there's like four songs they have to license to put it out on DVD. I never thought Girls Town would be out on
DVD. Mel Torme's in it. Dick Contino from Daddy-O's in it. The Platters are in it.
I wish my name was Dick Contino.
But yeah, Paul Anka sings two or three songs in Girls Town. I think two songs live, and then a third song. He sing the Girls Town theme with Mamie Van Doren.
Yeah, watch your P's and Q's.
Or you'll be sent to Girls Town.
I'm old because Girls Town, that episode, is one of 12 Mystery Science episodes I bought on eBay on VHS because they were impossible to obtain.
Yeah. I tape traded for that boy.
So, Mr. Paul Anka.
If you stop paying attention to the monsters, they'll lose their powers.
But people can't help looking at them. They're wrecking the town.
You know, maybe a jingle would help. Watch the Don't watch the monsters. Well, it'll sound a lot better coming out of Paul Anka.
Hey, Springfield! Are you suffering from the heartbreak of monsteritis? Then take a tip from Mr. Paul Anka!
To stop those monsters, 1, 2, 3, here's a fresh new way that's trouble-free. It's got Paul Anka's guarantee.
Guarantee void in Tennessee. Just don't look, just don't look. Just don't look, just don't look.
Boy, that's so great.
Oh, I love that song so much.
It's really good. So that Guarantee Void in Tennessee reminds me of something else. And I think in the 90s...
Talk Soup.
Can you let me talk about it, please?
Sorry.
It's okay. Yes. Because... there must have been some consumer rights thing where Tennessee had lesser consumer rights laws or no consumer rights laws, because in the series Talk Soup, the ones hosted by John Henson, there was this character named Baldo, and whenever Baldo appeared, after the segment, they would do this long spiel like about all this, you know.
Void where prohibited.
Yeah, exactly. Offer valid in 49 states. Sorry, Tennessee! So, there. Yes.
Yeah.
I could not find a clip of that anywhere.
Yeah,
it doesn't exist.
Talk Soup is like lost.
Yeah.
You can find some best of Talk Soup compilations.
What I meant to grab, I think Harry Shearer's impression there was
Monster.
Was of the voiceover guy for the Smucker's commercials. Because I didn't find the commercial with a name like Schmucker's. It's good.
That was also the Family Feedback commercial narrator.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, man. I mean, maybe he does his own voiceover and commercial.
Maybe, perhaps.
But Yes,
I'm dead now.
He's got to be.
For our international listeners, that some states have different laws on that shit, and apparently Tennessee was one of the worst ones. And I just love that Paul Anka is like point to people, like his turned point of like, guarantee.
It's a great animation.
Do you like that it's the ending of Sphere, where they have to forget about the monsters?
Man, Crichton ripped him off. I also like Yardley Smith rarely gets to talk outside of her Lisa voice, but her saying, monsteritis. I like that.
That's cute.
And then it gets kind of dark that Lisa threatens to gouge out Homer's eyes if he doesn't stop looking at Lardlad.
That's right.
And there's a cute little throwback to Homer saying, sprinkles, is the exact line Robo-Homer says in Treehouse of Horror 2.
Oh, you're right.
And I wonder if it's even the exact, like, clip there. But I also want to explain Norman Vincent Peale.
Oh, boy.
So, when the three guys die in a row, first the Paul Bunyan dude falls on the General Hospital. Blabe the Blue Ox falls on the orphanage, and the magic carpet guy, who is that, by the way, Bob?
I have to say, I think like the Red Devil, he's an amalgam of many magic carpet mascots, because I went on Twitter and I asked, like, who is this guy, and everyone had a local carpet dealer that had a magic carpet guy as the mascot. I did, too. I think it was called Remnant Room.
Ah.
What?
Yeah.
Well, so
we've got the deals for you, Remnant Room.
So the carpet guy falls on the birthplace of Norman Vincent Peale, who was a... technically a religious leader, but really a cult of personality guy in the 50s who wrote the classic book, The Power of Positive Thinking.
Fuck him!
And many theologians actually don't like him and see him as a guy who twisted the Bible into a worship of narcissism. And would it surprise you to let you know that Donald Trump was a parishioner of his in the 50s. The Trump family went to Norman Vincent Peale, and he said he learned quite a lot from him, that his father and mother were buried in services at Norman Vincent Peale's church, that Donald Trump was married to Ivana, married in Peale's church. This is how I learned a lot of stuff about Peale, because there were multiple articles of like, oh, is this who first taught Donald Trump to be a very selfish person who doesn't think of anyone but himself? And so that's also Norman Vincent Peale was longtime friends with Nixon and Reagan as well. So quite a great guy, I would say.
My question is, though, what is the joke there?
I believe some people think that his... I don't know what the joke is, honestly.
I'm not sure. I think,
It's a name to pull out there. I saw some people say that, well, he gave a lot to the 50s idea of selfishness and thinking of yourself, narcissism, or the power of positive thinking. Like, just think great things will happen and they'll happen, which is kind of a 50s bury your feelings type thing, which could kind of go into branding and mascots of the 50s, which is what they're fighting.
I see.
But as far as I can tell, there is no direct line you can build from Peale to advertisements. But I don't know, listeners, if you've got a different thing, I'd love to hear from that.
So I think I have two more mascots we didn't cover. So Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox, erected in 1936 in Bemidji, Minnesota.
Bemidji!
As a cheesy roadside attraction when that happened.
The Fargo thing we see?
Yes. Yep, that's it. And also the giant hat you see, the giant like Irish hat, in the very beginning, if you pause for like a tenth of a second, you see it as the mascot for Tam O'Shanter Tax Preparation.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and there's also a parody of the Western Exterminator guy. Do you know the guy with the glasses and the mallet about
to
hit the mouse?
I've seen that mallet I've seen that mascot still up. It was on the drive from my old job at Future U.S. Publishing in the South Bay to San Francisco. There was one of those of him killing some vermin with a mallet.
Speaking of video games, Color Dreams made an unlicensed game called Pesterminator that is a licensed Western Exterminator video game, and it sucks.
Wow, man.
Why would you do that?
You know, I'm not going to play that. I'm an Orkin man. My father was an Orkin man.
And we already covered the Kang and Kodos thing, but their appearance is random, but I did like the Shazbot and Earth Capital.
I say that all the time on the show, that when I was not a little kid at this point, I guess. I've grown up,
you're 14?
6 or 7 years since we started doing the show. but I got that reference. Bork and Mindy, it was how Robin Williams said shit on an 80s sitcom.
It was classy Robin Williams.
Shazbot.
Shazbot. Oh, Shazbot. And then we get to maybe the greatest act break of all time, which why don't we actually take a commercial break?
Oh, yeah.
Even as I speak, the scourge of advertising could be heading toward your town. Lock your doors, bar your windows, because the next advertisement you see could destroy your house and eat your family.
We'll be right back. The Simpsons. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Hank Azaria. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time. I didn't know that was a thing.
I love that. Wasn't there a Futurama act break with Bender saying, we'll be right back?
Yeah, I think he did that several times on that. I believe that it was in one of the Tales to Astonish.
Okay.
Wait, that wasn't the name of the episode. Tales of Interest?
Yeah.
Tales of Interest.
Tales of Interest.
Tales to Astonish was me Marvel. Mixing it up with Astonishing Tales in Marvel, yes. Mm. Yeah, but all right. Well, now 45 minutes of the episode, Section 2, which... Woo-hoo. They say on the commentary, and I think it is one of the scariest ones they've ever done. Like, yeah. It's gruesome. And,
yeah.
But, Chris, you're the expert on this one because you did a whole podcast on Nightmare on Elm Street.
An Elm Street Nightmare. You can find that at Elm Street. I forget the URL. Just Google it. It's on every podcast service.
It's on LaserTimePodcast.com as well.
It's my favorite horror series. It's super hokey now, but it really it terrified me as a kid. Freddy Krueger was terrifying.
It was also impressive when this episode was new. Mm-hmm. Freddy Krueger, compared to all the Twilight Zones and other old stuff they parody in Treehouse, this is a very recent movie for them to parody on the
because
Treehouse
it actually
episodes.
Involves like people being... Being murdered was the highlight. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason I love Nightmare on Elm Street, even the bad ones, is because they had to be at their core were little tiny music videos buried inside of a horror movie. So Freddy would kill you in your dreams. Now we have a skateboard dream and a cartoon dream and a
power glove dream.
He literally puts on sunglasses and kills a woman. No, he doesn't kill
He'll hack to death a comic book kid.
Yes.
He'll
turn someone into a cockroach.
Even the worst Freddy movie would have, you'd get a good kill or two.
Everyone hates four. It's like my favorite because everything is over the top and crazy. But it was created by from the mind of Wes Craven after he read an article in the LA Times about something that was called Asian Death Syndrome. But it was the early 80s.
It was like PTSD killing people.
It was these people people who were coming over to America who were dying in their sleep, but they felt in their dreams they were being chased. And I think the specific article this guy he thought he couldn't fall asleep. So he's making cups of coffee and trying to stay awake because he knew he would die when he went to sleep, and he did. So, and it was I don't know. It's it's hard to trust reporting on this from that era, especially when you call it Asian Death Syndrome.
Yeah,
it was like in Weekly World News.
It does sound like one of those things, like a weird story from the magical Orient. A man runs to death in his dream.
Oh, and I didn't get the trailer because I remember when we got the trailer for on Elm Street Nightmare. The first trailer for Nightmare on Elm Street is pretty cool in that no one knows who Freddy Krueger is, so he's not mentioned. Mm-hmm. He's never mentioned. And I think that's super important about this because Willie, I don't know if it was just a half-assed surrogate, but like, yeah, Freddy Krueger was the janitor at the Elm Street.
It actually fits really well.
It fits real well. It's that Willie's not a... Oh, what do they call it? Child torturer?
Murderer. They called him child murderer to imply nothing sexual was done. Though in the Jackie Earl Haley one, I believe they make it a little more clear
did
sex things with them too.
That movie
can't sell toys of Freddy Krueger if he is a sex...
And what I like about this timeline, I think what makes a good Simpsons joke, a reference, is that it has to be over. And there were no more Nightmare on Elm Street at this point. They were done.
It was a year after New Nightmare, right?
New Nightmare.
And a year before Scream.
So they were super done, Freddy Krueger was over, and I think they wouldn't have done it in earlier seasons because it was still a popular thing.
And he was still... hadn't become fully cornball yet due to overexposure, though.
Well,
I mean,
Freddy's dead.
Yes, oh yeah. But, I mean, I love Robert Englund as, like, the campy... He leaned into the camp so hard, and he's great at it.
He's so good. But yeah, Freddy Krueger was a janitor who murdered a bunch of the Elm Street children, and it's awesome. The lore is slowly unspooled throughout the entire series and Freddy Krueger's TV show, but that the parents, he got let off on a technicality. The parents took vigilante justice against him, burned him alive, and he threatened to haunt the children of Elm Street in their dreams for the rest of their life. And Six establishes that a sleep demon makes a pact with him. Yeah. It's crazy.
And then you find out he is the son of a thousand...
son of a thousand maniacs?
One of the movies has his origin stories. Like, his mother was raped by a thousand maniacs. So that's not how biology works. More evil sperm makes more evil children.
It's established in 3, and you get to see it in 5.
Oh, I'm glad they did that.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
I mean, it's... They don't see anything.
No, but I mean, you see the nun be surrounded by men, and then the scene kind of ends.
In a mental institution, and a guy who looks suspiciously like Robert Englund.
Yeah, I know. I guess they imply that that's his father. But then again, like the...
But it's implied that, like, this woman was raped by 100 mental patients, and no one knows who her father is.
Yeah.
No one knows who Freddy's father
is. They did a lot of stuff with the Fred. Well, they always had to get a new wrinkle to Freddy's origin to...
It's weird,
give
man.
An excuse for him to come back. I mean... Freddy, the Freddy movies are so messy too because each one kind of ends with them going like, well, we vanquished Freddy forever. Oh, no, we didn't.
Well,
like,
usually
that's how the segment ends.
Yes. Well, it's perfect. It's just like Freddy 1 and 2 both end with them like, well, I guess everything's fine. Let's get into a vehicle. Oh, Freddy's here. No!
But that's what's great about that's what's great about the device of killing in dreams is that you never really have to end it. And like everything can be ambiguous because it's supposed to replicate dreams.
Yeah. Yeah. And that Willy is definitely terrifying in Bart's dream. Like he pulling his head back and laughing while wearing his version of the Freddy sweater, which he does not wear in any other scene in this episode.
The sweater is chosen because it's supposed to be scientifically two jarring colors. And Wes Craven picked the hat, and I loved it. He tells the story in, I think, Never Sleep Again, the documentary. But listen to Elm Street Nightmare first. shout out to Lizzie Cuevas. He mentions it was like the middle of the night, and he encountered a drunk guy stumbling down the street, and he had Freddy's hat. And he's just like, hey, boy. And he's like, I'm getting goosebumps just like imagining it in my head. It seems horrifying.
My favorite bit in the first Nightmare on Elm Street is when he is cutting off his own fingers. Yeah. Like, that is so creepy.
In front of Beoff at Kodo.
Yeah. The first one alone, I'd say 1, 2, and 3 are all worth watching.
They're all worth watching. Even the bad ones are great.
I love Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
6 is the only one I would skip. 2003 would give us Freddy versus Jason, which is amazing.
It's actually
it's so good.
So the Bart's dream, I think the animators really loved being able to break the rules of Bart and have him do all the cartoony things.
Everything Macaroni hates is in this first segment.
So the first season is like flooded with Simpsons dream sequences, and they kind of go away for a while, right?
Yeah,
like
they kind of do.
Was that something Matt didn't like?
I don't think so. I think they had too much story to tell.
I mean, it's
didn't
hard
want to write them anymore. Yeah. Yes, or they. But in this
there's
one,
no
like,
time for subtlety or analogies. We can just say it.
Bart does a lot of extra movements. It's not even just the big Tex Avery wild takes or the no sales stuff. It's also just his his extra movements are the things he does not do in normal Simpsons.
Yeah, visually it's a weird premise to say, let's make this cartoon be more like a cartoon. So yes, they move more. Also, there are no hard black lines in the backgrounds. They're all just painted. So from the beginning, you're like, the first time you watch it, something does seem off about it. And then SLH starts talking.
I will say, Willy is very good at the one-liners that Freddy is known for.
He's better. He's better than Freddy.
Though he does not say bitch all that much.
Buckle up, bitch!
Man, he sure says bitch a lot!
You can run, but you can't hide, bitch!
God damn it, Scary Terry. I love being able to watch them in chronological order. Freddy does not say the word bitch until 3.
Yeah.
In the famous scene that I now have a Christmas ornament of. Welcome to prime time, bitch. And Robert Englund improvised that on set. It was not supposed to be a thing. And he says, he said something about it. I've been signing autographs with bitch in it ever since. Because the producers loved it.
Him and Jesse from Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, if he's like Jesse, bitch. Of just like everybody assumes he said bitch every other line on the show. It's like, maybe you're making up those bitches.
I hear he's super sweet about it too. Yeah, I'll call your mom a bitch. Give me the phone.
My favorite Jesse line is like, he can't keep getting away with it.
Those last two seasons.
I love when he played the game Rage.
Yes.
as a sign of his inner rage.
with a light gun, and you can play Rage with it. Also, Bart, it follows the rules of Nightmare. Mm-hmm. Bart wakes up with the damage from his dreams.
It's the same damage Nancy gets in the...
That's right. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. And Nancy, one of the saddest things on that in the Freddy films is that they kill off Nancy in 3.
Yeah.
So she could... Yeah. They had to just do a postmodern one for 7.
Wes Craven's
just
New
to
Nightmare
bring her back.
Is one of the coolest things I've ever seen. It only stutters in the ending when it has to be a Nightmare movie.
I think it's okay. I think Scream is a better version of that idea, but Heather Langenkamp really can't carry a movie. They're asking her to do way too much.
But
she's
that little kid. It ups the ante.
It's true.
It made me miss Heather Langenkamp because I was just like, man, I miss her. But it was
weird. You not like her because she has Butthead's mouth?
Well,
kind of.
Well, it was weird to see that movie too, though, because they're like, Oh, no, James Spader is, he's playing a character. He's not James Spader, but she is Heather Langenkamp. Like, yeah. It took me out of it a little, but yes, there, the damage in dreams, it continues into the real world.
And then he raked me across the chest. And the weirdest thing was, it was that school janitor who mysteriously disappeared, Groundskeeper Willie.
Oh, my God, Bart, Groundskeeper Willie was in my nightmare, too. But he got me with hedge clippers.
He ran his floor buffer over me!
Children, I couldn't help monitoring your conversation. There's no mystery about Willie. Why, he simply disappeared. Now, let's have no more curiosity about this bizarre cover-up.
And that's, it's one of those things you get mad at Nightmare on Elm Street, that like kids are dying and the adults are still covering up the story.
Well, I don't know.
Stop talking about Nancy. There is no Freddy Krueger. Like, she just name-checked the guy you killed from her dreams. Listen to the lady.
I like that Nelson is so clean he has a sound effect.
Yes, yeah. No, I noticed in this, so there's damage to all of the kids standing there, visible damage, except for Milhouse. And I wonder if there was a deleted Milhouse joke in there or something.
Maybe.
It's weird that no violence would have happened to Milhouse. Like that.
He's the first kid you kill.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Which I was shocked that he was not the first kid they kill on screen.
Oh boy, I love this Martin scene so much.
You have 3 hours to
finish.
Then put your head down on your desk and sit quietly.
A duet of pleasures.
So
cute. I am the wondrous wizard of Latin. I am a dervish of declension and a conjurer of conjugation with a million hit points and maximum charisma. Morire, to die. Morit, he, she, or it dies.
Maurice, ye die.
You've mastered a dead tongue, but can you handle a live one?
Wheel him out quietly. It's best the children don't see him. Oh, just get it out of here. Not into the kindergarten.
I wanted to stay quiet during that Russi Taylor screaming her lungs out. Yeah. It is a horrifying scream.
The only joke to it is just like that it's so terrifying, it makes the ha-ha funny that it's followed up with, but just like,
yeah. I borrow the line, a duet of pleasures, duet all the time.
I want to give her credit because like, it's a very specific scream from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh.
And it's a very specific, semi-specific scene because Nightmare on Elm Street 4, forget her name, but she is killed in class. Is it Sheila? She's killed in class. Pucker up, bitch. And he sucks the life out of this girl.
That's right, yeah.
And she gets wheeled out in front of the whole class.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, I completely forgot.
So that I don't think that's the only time that happens in the series.
Also, as a kid, I did, or as a 13-year-old seeing this, I was not as into tabletop role-playing games as I was, so I didn't get the a million hit points and maximum charisma.
That's great.
That is some D&D statage there, which, again, like, I love that in Martin's dreams, he gets to be as gay and dorky as he wants to be. He's like, I am the Latin.
The king of Latin.
Yeah, and all the like dorky Harvard jokes about Latin. I love it.
But once again, Willie's line is way too smart for Freddy Krueger. That is a Harvard writer line.
That is true. Maurice, you die. You can handle a death. That it's funny to see him strangled by a tongue, but then to see him just like, no, Martin is strangled to death here. I guess it's not as bad. It's as equally bad as being ground up into meat as Martin had been done before. Or no, wait, no, he was making himself tired and stringy. That's what they call
it. Tired and stringy.
But so yes, we get the origin of Willie where he is murdered by, threw in action by all the parents, but
really,
killed nonetheless.
He should get revenge against Homer.
Yeah, Homer
just Homer.
Yes. I think this might be line of the show, the start of this.
I think so, yeah.
That's the joke.
It all started on the 13th hour of the 13th day of the 13th month. We were there to discuss the misprinted calendars the school had purchased.
Oh, lousy smarch weather. Do not touch Willie. Good advice.
Huh?
Our next budget item, $12 for doorknob repair. We charge fire extinguishers. Now this is a free service of the fire department.
Lousy smarch weather.
Yes.
Anytime you're in bad weather, I want to say lousy smarch weather.
It's lived on forever.
It reminds me of that ALF calendar someone sent us. If you look underneath, they have Melmacian months for every and like fake Melmacian holidays. I believe it's still on June, which is Oring on Melmac.
They're like it's like IKEA furniture they're named after.
Yeah. But smarch being the 13th month, that would be January. That would be the 13th month.
We're out of smarch now.
And I said that after everybody's like 2016 the worst year ever, then I was like, I think January of 2017 is really the smarch of 2016.
It really is.
And yeah, so every January 13th at 1 p.m. you should celebrate the death of Willie. And smarch is just such a fucking funny joke. It actually obscures almost the also funny don't touch Willie.
Yeah, good advice.
I didn't, for the longest time, I didn't take it as like, oh, Homer sees that as the advice to kids of like, don't masturbate, don't touch your Willie. But that's finally what he, and I just love the punchy editing to like, $12 for doorknob repair. Like it just like smashes into
this. Is a free service.
Yes.
Nay.
And so in the second part of Willie's death,
oh boy,
we found out about a deleted scene thanks to them. This was when Kirk Van Houten was officially named. Actually.
That's right. They cut the scene where they respond to his complaint about the spaghetti meals. Mm. But I looked on Frinkiac, and I think the first time he's called Kirk is in A Millhouse Divided.
Wow.
Like, so not until season 8 is he called Kirk. Man.
But they knew he was Kirk from this episode onward, yes. Internally.
I love this, too.
Help! Please help me!
Willie, please. Mr. Van Houten has the floor.
I, for one, would like to see the cafeteria menus in advance so parents can adjust their dinner menus accordingly. I don't like the idea of Milhouse having two spaghetti meals in one day. You'll pay for this with your children's blood!
Oh, right. How are you going to get them? Skeleton power?
Strike where you cannot protect them! In their dreams!
Great design on Skeleton Willie. I also love Kirk's choice of words. Very specific, a spaghetti meal.
Yeah,
I borrow that all the time. Would you like to go out for a hamburger meal with me? Or perhaps a sushi meal?
And I love Wiggum's unnecessary taunting of him, of just like, skeleton power.
He's not even impressed. Like, the skeleton is talking to me. How are you going to get me?
In Nightmare on Elm Street, John Saxon plays one of the main culprits.
He's a police officer. Isn't he? Yes, that's right.
And he is killed by a skeleton.
That's so stupid. I like it, but it's so stupid.
Yeah, I'm putting it all together.
It's like Ray Harryhausen like helped out with that.
Oh, that's such a cool sequence.
And then in New Nightmare, isn't John Saxon also murdered?
Yes.
The
real actor who was best friends with Heather Lick.
Yeah. Who also disappears from Mitchell, the MST3K classic. John Saxon was in the film, and just over the radio, they're like, John Saxon characters died in between these scenes. You won't see him
between
again.
These episodes.
Yes, between these episodes of the show, the failed pilot Mitchell. But,
I didn't know that.
So Abe is used really good in tiny doses in this episode, including his like, welcome to my world. I love that line. It also follows the Elm Street path of like the kids realizing we can't run forever. We've got to face him ourselves.
Face him in the dream.
Yeah, and to battle him in the dream world. It makes it a mental struggle, which is much I always preferred to just like, well, what are we going to do with Jason? I don't know, hit him with something bigger? What if we get a gun and shoot him more?
Yeah, you always need some kind of caveat to take down Freddy.
I think I've complained about this on the air before. I love the first movie so much, but the ending makes no sense. It's like, oh, we just decide we don't believe in you anymore and your power goes away. Just like, you can't just make that up.
In the Nightmare on Elm Street?
One, yeah.
Well, it ends on like, no, Freddy won.
It's true, but it's like when they quote-unquote get rid of him, she's just like, I don't believe in you anymore. You can't hurt me. And it's just like, well, this sucks,
but that's why there's so
many... It was a fake-out by him.
Yeah. So that's why it's an awesome interpretation, because everyone who was killed comes back to life, and they drive away in an automobile where the convertible where the cover is Freddy Krueger colored, and he laughs.
I heard Wes Craven hated that.
There's multiple endings. Yeah. There were multiple ending shots.
He just wanted to make one movie.
But they keep it open every single time. They never close it on Freddy.
Though one joke that's real dated in this is the idea of like, well, we're up really late. There's only boring things to watch on TV. It's like, well, in a streaming age, that's over. Yeah. Like you always have something interesting. Well, honestly,
never
too
much. Have to suffer Dick Cavett ever again.
I think it was Asian Market Roundup.
Yeah, I love that. Just the
The farm report is 4 hours early.
So when they go into the dreams, mm-hmm. I also love the design in the final dream. Really does remind me of when they have the dreams about Freddy's home and the two little girls who are singing mm-hmm. 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you.
Oh yeah,
it reminds me of the same kind of layout, except it's the school. I don't know. It's yeah. really cool.
No, I love the way this sequence looks. I do wish they had Sherry and Terry as sing a song, jump and rope.
They just did not
they
have the
missed
time.
That. Yeah, it's like too much to cram in.
But I also love the design of Willie. He has become his beloved tractor.
This is like a straight up cartoon dream. This is the most cartoon The Simpsons has ever been. It rules.
When I'm done with you, they'll have to do a compost mortem. Sinky sand.
Willie's gone for good. Now I can get back to my normal dreams. Me and Krusty winning the Super Bowl.
Bart, there's 2 seconds left. Now listen up. It's your basic Statue of Liberty play. With one twist, you throw it to me. Newt Rockne called it the forward pass. Now, the clock's still running, so it's important we start this play as quickly as possible. Ah! Oh, boy. Don't dream about me no more, kid.
Oh, Lisa, help! Bart, you're in trouble! Wake up! Wait a minute. If you're here, then you've fallen asleep, too.
Not asleep. I'm just resting my eye. Uh-oh.
So, Newt Rockne, if you want to know who that is.
Ronald Reagan.
He was the Notre Dame coach in the early 20th century. He died in 1931, so he was really coaching during those leather helmet days, where all the best concussions came from. That's all you need to know.
He was played by Jason Momoa in the Drunk History on Newt Rockne.
Oh, I didn't know there was one. Okay.
I'm confused with a different one, but I do know Ronald Reagan played Newt Rockne.
Doesn't everybody wish they, when they die, they'd be played by Jason Momoa? Jesus Christ.
Did he do something important outside of win football games?
I mean, he was just probably the first famous name in the world of football.
The first famous Norwegian.
I just love that Krusty... His first think of like, well, the standard football play is Statue of Liberty, which is, in case you don't know, which I know because they did it in every cartoon, it is an overly complicated play that never works. It's so rarely done in real life. The examples I read about were like only from college games. Like it would almost never work in a professional game, but it is a fake pass. You put the quarterback has both hands on the ball. He then lifts both hands up behind him, pretends to have the ball in his right hand while dropping the ball behind him, does a fake pass with his right hand, meanwhile the running back behind him has grabbed the ball he dropped behind him. And it's called Statue of Liberty because when you do the fake pass, you're sort of in the torch holding up position.
I feel like any play that's close to a magic trick should not be on the field.
It never works.
Yeah,
but
it's like, where's the ball? Where's the ball?
But if you're putting it in a cartoon show like, say, Tiny Toons or it's on the Brady Bunch, then you're like, all right, Statue of Liberty play. Hut, hut, hut.
That sounds like a football play because if you freeze frame any bit of a throw, you might look like the Statue of Liberty.
I will admit to watching an episode of the Brady Bunch last night to try on the wiki page for Statue of Liberty play. This is mentioned, and then an episode of the Brady Bunch is mentioned where they say, like, Michael explains to Peter how to do it. And so I looked up the fucking episode and I watched it. I cannot find when he... I will admit I half watched it like double speed, but I cannot find where he explains the Statue of Liberty play.
Does Jan get her nose broken via Statue of Liberty play?
No, the plot of this one is that Michael is training for the big game against their rival high school team.
Michael?
Peter, whoever the oldest one
Greg.
Is.
Greg.
Sorry. Greg is learning all the plays in his playbook. Meanwhile, she's the oldest Brady girl.
Marcia. I'm all over this.
All right. Marcia starts dating the captain of the football team from the rival school. And Greg is like, he's only dating you to steal our playbook. And then Greg makes a great plan to create a fake playbook that he lets the guy steal. So then they're learning from the wrong playbook. But of course, Mr. Brady is just like, now, Greg, that was wrong. You're just as bad as him for tricking him with that playbook.
So $20,000 talking Brady's, hosted by Henry and nobody else.
It was a bad episode of the Brady's, and I couldn't even find him explaining a Statue of Liberty play. That episode is called Quarterback Snack?
Wow. Remember, bear in mind, Henry didn't even mention the Terminator 2 reference in the sinking of the sand.
Oh, yes, yeah, in the sinking sand it was.
Instead, he focused on watching the Brady Bunch. What kind of nerd are you?
Well, I also loved the transformations with Plaid on top of it, of him trying to get out of the sinking sand was great.
Yeah, a bunch of split-second transformations. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that.
It reminded me of the wizard fight in Sword in the Stone, actually. Mm-hmm. All the transformations. It's beautiful.
It reminded me of Feet of Clay Part 2, the Batman the Animated Series episode, where Clayface turns into all the actors he portrayed.
TMS is probably best animation in the entire series. That's
it
really
is
saying
gorgeous.
Something. I also like that he's so clever with compost mortem, but then when he's stuck in the sand, he's just like, sinky sand. All his cleverness is just gone. And it's legitimately scary, him rising out of the sand. It's really
reminds
great.
Me of the TV version of It, which is awful.
Yes, yeah. I haven't watched the new It.
Great. It's a really good Nightmare on Elm Street movie. Like, more so than the... I haven't read the book, but more so than the original. Yeah, it's just the clown It creating a bunch of fake, scary facades built to scare the specific person. So that's what... In a Freddy movie, if you have a fear, that's the thing Freddy will exploit. And it makes less sense as we go on, because that girl didn't like roaches, and then she becomes a roach. Nobody likes roaches. Nobody likes roaches.
I mean, I get it for, like, the girl whose parents pushed her into not eating anything and making her bulimic, but... Yeah, nobody likes roaches.
Open wide, bitch.
So Maggie saves the day in very convenient fashion. Yes, not unlike the ending of an Elm Street movie.
By plugging his bag hole.
Yeah, kind of dirty when you think about it. I also like the animation of when they land safely on the moon, that it's like they have their own gravity around the moon when they spin around it.
It's really cute. I like it.
It's Bob Anderson and his animation team on this really did a lot of great little flourishes, especially in the Willy section here. Actually, yeah, finally in a very similar kind of, he's not really dead ending to Elm Street, we get a bit of silliness at the end here.
I don't know, Bart. Something tells me Willy's still out there, and that he could come back any time in any form and kill us in ways we can't even imagine.
Boo! Hello? Stop! I left my gun on the seat! Wait here, please.
So we get the yakety sax version of the Simpsons theme. He was just going to shoot Bart and Lisa in the head.
His final plan was like, I will get off this bus and shoot children on the street.
And in Freddy's Dead, Nightmare on Elm Street Part 6, Freddy returns. How?
Via bus?
In a bus.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, he also kills the also ends two on a bus too, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Yeah. I love that ending because in that film, Freddy represents the gay urges of the lead character.
Please, if you listen to only one episode of Elm Street Nightmare, please, episode two.
I love his reaction of like, do you think Freddy's back? When it's just like, it's like he's getting a boner. Freddy's like, could Freddy come back? Oh boy. That's when kissing a girl cures him of his Freddy
urges.
It's all
Freddy
takes.
It's one.
According to
I
the
haven't
actor,
tried that yet.
Footage from the movie is so gay, it played in gay nightclubs in the
80s. I love that. Our friend of the show, Louis Peitzman, who we should totally, man, saying this out loud,
deputy editor of BuzzFeed Entertainment?
Really? Wow. Mm-hmm. We need to have him. I will make this promise henceforth. Mm-hmm. I will do my best to have him on the next Treehouse one, because he did.
He ranked them all.
If you've seen the list on BuzzFeed that ranks every Treehouse segment from best to worst to best, that was all Peitzman. And so we should totally have him on the next
one. He's the best.
Mm-hmm. I think kids today don't understand how amazing this CGI looked in the third segment, Homer Q.
In terms, I just watched the Community Season 6 episode where they go into VR. And like, that looks intentionally bad. This still looks better.
It looks better. I remember the commercials for this. If listeners remember, on the Bart Sells His Souls, I talked about watching the preview for the whole season that showed clips from like the first six episodes or so. when they showed Bart saying, cool, man, or Homer's holy macaroni, I was like, how is this possible? This is the Homer greatest Cube, thing baby. That's ever happened.
And I will say it holds up pretty well for being 22 years old in CGI, but I think the scenes in 3D aren't very funny, but they didn't need to be. They were just a visual showcase. I think the jokes in the 3D world are kind of lame.
They count on you being impressed.
Yeah, like, and I was. I mean, we were all impressed.
That carries a lot of it, and they had gone with Pacific Image Data?
Yes.
Yes.
Which PDI, who up to this point had worked on such commercials as the Pillsbury Doughboy. He had also done the, which also really holds up, the morphing in the black or white.
That's right.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
They were eventually acquired by DreamWorks, and they made to go on to make Ants
and Shrek,
and then they
were shuttered in 2015 because they made a bunch of crap.
But I do like pointing this out. Toy Story is 1 month off. Mm-hmm. The world has not really seen computer animation. And I wanted to ask you, do you remember when you first saw computer animation?
I believe the first time I saw computer animation was at a department store in the TV section because they had some VHS of just a ton of student CGI films, including like some of the first Pixar's, like the Tin Toy one. They would play that on a loop, and I was spellbound. I was like, Mom, please don't decide on a refrigerator yet. I have to see all of these. That's moving liquid metal. It's amazing. Like, I saw Terminator 2 before this, but an actual entire animated thing that was all CG was probably that.
And
that's
I think
the first
we
time. Early 90s.
Really know what it was. I know these episodes are old, but like, there's nothing feels older than being in a pre-Pixar world where this show is and still being CG. Like, so unless you were reading the trades, which we might not have been, we didn't know Toy Story was even coming. Mm-hmm. That a movie looked like that. And once again, Toy Story changed animation forever. There is no longer any traditionally animated.
You can argue it hurt it, damaged it a bit.
And I think it has one of the most perfect scripts in the world, just like
really
a clockwork script. And I will say, I was exposed to 3D animation like with the Dire Straits Money for Nothing video, which David Silverman designed those characters.
I didn't know that.
That's crazy.
He says on the commentary he just wanted it to look better than Dire Straits. That's all he wanted.
I remember, I can't think of an equivalent technology. Because I remember noticing when I first something hit me, I remember it was a Coke commercial where a museum T-Rex skeleton came to life.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, how the fuck did they do that? That wasn't drawn. And it first occurred to me, and I found out later that was Pixar. Because Pixar is a company that has existed forever, has a fascinating history. George Lucas lost it in a bet that was called Howard the Duck, sold it to Steve Jobs, essentially. And they made commercials because you couldn't afford to make an entire movie about it. In that process, because it was so expensive and so time-consuming, that the only way you could fund that kind of animation was commercial work.
Mm-hmm. Because the money per second was so high compared to even traditional animation, which is by no means cheap. Traditional animations isn't cheap either.
And the reason they went to PDI is because they specialized in character animation in 3D, where we're talking about Pixar. Their early shorts were inanimate objects moving around, like unicycles and things like
that. Like, I read a bunch about Flight of the Navigator, and it's boring to read technically, but like watching this guy tell you about for 3 years how their big struggle, all they were trying to do in Flight of the Navigator was make a reflective surface. And it was like fucking impossible, or it could crash in the middle of it. And like that, it in 1986, that sold the whole movie, reflective technology.
But I also think PDI really leveled up their game working on this, because
they
learned a lot from David Silverman and other, like, David Silverman is a master animator, like one of the best of his generation. And I don't think it's a surprise that this was the assignment that landed them DreamWorks, SKG, and Ants, which would come out 3 years later. Signed the deal for that.
So it was directed at PDI by Tim Johnson, but it's interesting. There's a special feature on the disc that, like, they storyboarded it like a normal episode. Mm-hmm. So they couldn't really behave outside the lines of the Simpsons model. So I just thought that was fascinating.
It was really great. I think they learned a lot from. There's also a funny bit on the commentary where they say that the animators didn't know what to do with all of Bart's hair, but they're like, "Well, no, there's a toy. Yes. There's Bart toys.
There's been a thousand toys. Just add more triangles,
and it still looks weird." But the only CGI I can think of that was on TV before this was the series Reboot, which I think was started in '93 or '94. But
this looks better than Reboot.
Reboot looks hideous, and I mean, they had to make an entire
no
TV
offense,
series.
90s kids.
Yeah. I mean, I watched it all, but they had to make an entire series for CGI, and they had to cut a lot of corners. But this looks so much better than Reboot.
And we we just watched UHF on the LaserTime Patreon, and there's that sequence parodying the Dire Straits video, and like, this is the best Hollywood could do. 3 years later, they get to reboot, which still sucks. This is a long process. And then eventually the Donkey Kong Kong cartoon Bob made us watch last year.
I like how...
Listen to it, folks.
I like how Weird Al replaces the F slur with Clamp It. Look at this Clamp It. It's true. It's true.
Oh, and the last thing about PDI, though, I think Chris, as a fellow Muppet head, will love. They designed Waldo, the first CGI Muppet, which... Jim Henson was so excited to show off in one of his Henson Hour specials.
And that's another place where I remember discovering CG for the first time. And
that's the Muppets 3D, right?
Muppets 3D and the Jim Henson Hour. The opening had a lot of CG in it, but I'm just trying
to... It was one of those things like Henson was like, it's fun to experiment with things, and this CG is part of the future.
But they still couldn't do a whole episode out of it. You got little bits of it. So I'm trying to think of some like modern technology, like... You're not getting trickles of VR throughout the decade until it eventually becomes the standard.
But yes, this looked amazing. I don't know how else to put it. Like, if you didn't see this originally, this might look kind of like lame, especially the water. The water looks like ass.
It's just there to show off, really. Yeah. And I will say that it's not the artist's fault that the PDI was shuttered. Do you remember, like, it was only 10 years ago where DreamWorks reigned supreme and, like, Disney and Pixar were trying to catch
they
up.
They won the first Oscar for Best Animated Film.
Yep. Shrek.
Good for them.
They made lots of great stuff, but they were told to make 8 million things. And
everything needed to be a franchise.
Eventually, it was just overload of, like, I can't see another smug character. I just can't.
Yeah, and like a Peabody and Sherman movie, that's honestly 20 years too late.
Yes,
I love them so much.
We were too old. They were too old in the 90s. But like, I would have lapped it up then.
Yeah.
But though, well, speaking of CGI, boy, the Rocky and Bullwinkle in CG, they don't look so good.
I forgot about that.
Yep. Not me. I watched it a bunch.
Remember in the film when Robert De Niro does his taxi driver routine?
Are you talking to me?
That was his first Dirty Grandpa role.
Yep, it was the beginning of the Dirty Grandpa era of him. But also,
there's a trailer for that movie that I haven't been able to find. I don't think it's in the actual movie. You're like, and these animated characters have combined with the real world. This is the first time it's happened. And someone's like, you mean like Who Framed Roger Rabbit? This is entirely different!
I do remember that trailer.
That's funny. Yeah. I do remember that. That was good. But, okay, the other thing that inspired this, though, is a classic Twilight Zone.
That's right.
From season 3, episode 26.
Oh. Yeah, Twilight Zone, Little Girl Lost, written by Richard Matheson.
Ooh, he's good.
Of I Am Legend. I love being able to say that. and it involves a little girl who just disappears into a portal to a different dimension in a room. And
this is such a great short story.
It's really neat. And like, this is the father discovering his daughter and Serling telling you what's up.
What'd you do? Roll underneath?
Daddy!
All right, honey, I'm right here. Now, come on out. Come on, you just crawl underneath the bed. Tina. Come on, take my hand. Come on. In the...
Daddy!
Missing one frightened little girl. Name Bettina Miller. Description, 6 years of age, average height and build. Light brown hair, quite pretty. Last seen being tucked in bed by her mother a few hours ago. Last heard, aye, there's the rub, as Hamlet put it. For Bettina Miller can be heard quite clearly, despite the rather curious fact that she can't be seen at all. Present location? Let's say for the moment, in the Twilight Zone.
How convenient.
The scary duo. I put that girl just screaming daddy from... Mm-hmm. Being nowhere. It's terrifying to watch.
Yeah. It's such a great, simple premise of just like that this could happen to anybody. Yeah. This is just
for
like
no reason.
A wormhole can open anywhere for any reason, theoretically. So it could just be in your wall. And your daughter's just lost.
And it's like we always, I think Simpsons fans shorthand the name of Homer Cubed as the Tron episode.
Oh, yeah. God.
But even the Tron bit. It's a Twilight Zone parody, like every season so far.
It's the third dimension instead of the fourth dimension, which is what's in Little Girl
Lost. And the influence I couldn't believe that I found is Myst.
Yeah.
That it's visually and The whole thing is visually inspired by Myst, because Myst, I think, is still pound for pound the second best-selling video game of all time.
Jesus Christ.
And that nobody likes or wants to talk about it anymore.
When some jerk tried to make his own Myst game.
But you all played it.
What was that game, Bob? Which game? It was terrible. The
second Myst?
The Prisoner? No, The Witness.
Oh, The Witness. That sucks. Yeah. Well, read my US game review.
Did everybody play Myst? It's difficult to describe.
No. I didn't have a computer. No. I will say, I'll say this 1,000 times this season, but Oakley and Weinstein patterned season 7 after season 3, their favorite TV season ever, and it only makes sense that there's a Twilight Zone parody. Mm-hmm. They're going back to the Twilight Zone parodies that were in like 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't see Little Girl Lost until about 8 years ago. I didn't know this was a Twilight Zone parody.
I didn't even make the connection when it like came up on Netflix that this was the basis
Until the when it clicked for me was when he drew on the wall in the exact way Frank does it.
But, right.
But I can't believe I can't believe how much Miss visually inspired it, but the Gracie logo at the end. They changed the Gracie music theme for the Miss theme for the Cyan opening.
Yeah, I mean, throughout the Homer being in that space, there is that very new agey, misty music.
And this is the, like, if you open up Miss Cyan, the company that published it, you'd hear this.
That definitely sounds like what they play over the credits, too.
Yeah, I didn't know that's what they were going for until researching.
You're totally right. I think at this era and time, most people, their first experience with 3D graphics or 3D modeling would be missed, for sure.
Well, because these are rich dorks, the writers, and so they probably just got their first CD-ROM drive computer.
I mean, this segment,
so they're going to play Myst.
This segment is written by a guy with a PhD in computer science.
Is really?
That's David S. Cohen,
proto-Futurama, anything is.
There was a bunch of math shit written on Frank's chalkboard that I could tell you what it means, but it wouldn't mean anything to you. David Cohen is like, this is based on something's wager.
It also, I love it that there is a...
This is Hitler's net.
So there's a number in the background. There's a math equation that's wrong. And that Mike Reese tells this fun... I heard him in an interview tell this funny story about David Cohen of like, Mike Reese is also a smart dude. He went to Harvard and learned math stuff there. And he's like, hey, wait, no, this is mathematically wrong, this thing you put in the background. And then David X. Cohen is like, actually, it is a classic thing that people get wrong, but it is actually proven true through this equation. And it's like, Jesus Christ.
The one thing I remember is Frink Rules is written out in ASCII on the chalkboard.
that's the early Alien Ease, I'd say, too.
I swear to God, Cohen spends about 3 minutes on the commentary explaining everything that's written on that chalkboard. Yeah. It's great.
Well, Cohen was totally just in the mood of like, well, this is how we do it on Futurama commentary, because I spend minutes explaining
I will
math.
Tell you what all my math things are.
I don't want to make fun of David X.
He's got
a
fun
he's
voice.
A genius, but yeah, he's funny. But okay, why don't we play a clip from this episode?
Just a second!
Huh? I never looked behind this whatchamacallit case before. Huh? That's weird. It's like something out of that Twilighty show about that zone.
I love that line.
Patty and Selma have arrived. Another season 3 throwback. They want to bore people with the post-vacation stuff.
Yeah, and shelling things also feels like a terrible ant thing to do that like seems like fun, but is actually like manual labor for nothing.
You could just suck them out.
Oh, she gets like a bloody hermit crab mustache. It's like the grossest thing I've ever seen simply animated.
Also, when Homer tries to hide in the closet when Bart and Lisa are there, notice that the Homer bowling ball is on the top shelf there, which don't put bowling balls on the top shelf of things, people. It should really go on the bottom. But
and I really want, if you watch this again, pay attention to the part where both Homer and Bart enter the CG dimension. It's an angle you never see at The Simpsons. They have to up the frame rate so it looks natural when Homer steps through into 3D. Slow it down. It looks like one of the weirdest animated things you've seen on The Simpsons.
Bill Oakley was a big believer that was the moment to sell you that had to work. So they put extra effort into that. So I could see them extra over animating 2D Homer there. It kind of reminded me of hearing like that George Lucas made them redo the first shot of Star Wars 8 million times. He's like, this has to work. If this isn't perfect, the entire film fails. And I think it's the same deal with this special effects here.
Yeah, and that's another thing I wanted to point out. I think this is the beginning of this press release stunt of the Treehouse of Horror. Up until this point, they were just Halloween episodes. It wasn't newsworthy.
There was no big guest.
And now The Simpsons, at least three times a year, has a big giant stunt that it deviates from form.
I think they kind of overdo it now, but it's cute sometimes.
A little bit.
Oh, glory of glories. Oh, heavenly testament to the eternal majesty of God's creation.
Holy macaroni!
Hey! You can just suck them out.
Hello? Can anybody hear me?
Homer, where are you?
I'm somewhere where I don't know where I am.
Do you see towels? If you see towels, you're probably in the linen closet again.
Just a second. No, it's a place I've never been before.
The shower.
Hey!
I love his echoey voice is just like Tina's voice from A Little Girl Lost, which, by the way, Tina, the voice was by a veteran voice actress at the time who had most famously been the brunette stepsister in Cinderella.
Oh, really?
Travilla, I
think. Oh, yeah, they're awful. I love that movie.
That was the voice of Tina. It was not the girl you see in the episode doing the voice. But just that Homer... Also, I like the background of that. Like, Homer one time was trapped in the linen closet.
Yeah.
And he was screaming from the house, but I just like, it's somewhere where I don't know where I am. And... we get some more stuff of just seeing, like, other than Homer, everything around him is simple static shapes that will not really move all that much or change, and it's just easy to light.
Ever owned a trapper keeper? You're probably familiar really with this like imagery.
Yeah, really.
It's like floating balls above, like, marble floors.
I also just love this bit of Marge's solution to the problem.
Yeah. I don't want to alarm you, Marge, but I seem to be trapped in here.
We better call Ned. He has a ladder.
What's going on here? I'm so bulgy. My stomach sticks way out in front and my...
Well, as that tree said to the lumberjack, I'm stumped.
It's like he just disappeared into fat air.
Hey, shut up!
they're totally scoring points off of Homer. It's great.
And he can't do anything. Shut up! It's just beautiful.
Disappearing into fat air.
And that's also, this line doesn't hold up anymore because it doesn't look expensive.
No.
I do love this.
Man, this place looks expensive. I feel like I'm wasting a fortune just standing here. Better make the most of it.
And they get stuck in the butt with a comb.
I gotta shout out that episode of Community. I know most people haven't seen season 6, but...
I love that episode.
And Jesus Wept that Keith David has designed...
Jesus Wept! Stop saying
that! A VR operating system where you physically have to climb a ladder and open a drawer to create a new file.
To move a folder.
And it's a very 1995 concept.
Is that streaming on the Spongle Network?
It's on Hulu.
Okay.
It's on Hulu now. Moved them all to Hulu.
It didn't pull a CISO and just abandon its content.
Did the Yahoo streaming that you needed at Xbox 360 just to watch Community? Yes. Jesus Christ.
But they didn't pull a CISO and like Chernobyl everything they made.
You can't even see it.
It's gone.
There's multiple seasons of shows like, you're not seeing this.
They executed Scott Huckerman.
There's comedians with specials like, I don't know where it goes.
I honestly love that Dan Harmon et al. Defrauded Yahoo of money. They're just like, we'll see your show. Yeah, he did defraud them of money, too. Good for him.
Good for him.
I hope we can find a CISO someday to rip off.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but if you want to see what actually looks like expensive CG for The Simpsons now, The Simpsons Ride is them in CG.
I hate it.
I mean, I think it looks all right.
When I heard about the CG, I immediately didn't want to ever go on it.
For me, the ride, everything around the ride is better than the ride itself.
The ride has to move in 3D space, so they can't do 2D animation wouldn't really work.
Or they could have worked really hard. And
don't see that happening.
Made a 3D world. We've seen cel-shady traditional animated stuff before. It seems lazy to me when every time I...
Oh, it's not even cel-shaded?
No.
Weird.
No, it's like this. No. The ride is...
I don't care for that.
I mean, they didn't spend the money to get Montgomery Burns to be the villain, so they're not going to... Which he should have been. Not, but Sideshow Bob is a fine villain, and Krusty Land is a fine setting, but it's just so weird.
Visiting all of Springfield is more rewarding than that ride, I think.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, can you imagine? I never went to... Universal when it was just the ride in the Krusty Land exterior and not also Springfield. It feels
Hollywood.
Disappointing.
And like, Hollywood, I think, is getting the rest of Springfield.
Oh, it's got full Springfield. Oh, it's actually a bigger Springfield than Orlando.
Take that, Florida.
Because they have to hide more stuff. So, like, say in Orlando, they don't have the Aztec Theater. In Hollywood, they do.
Is that a Patreon goal that send us to fucking both parks so we can nerd out over who has what
budget.
Reference?
Well, okay, Bob, I have a question for you.
You
have
go
you
on.
Seen the movie Tron?
No.
No.
Do you see a light, Homer?
Yes.
Move into the light, my son.
No!
Homer, this is your physician, Dr. Julius Hibbert. Can you tell us what it's like in there?
It's like, did anyone see the movie Tron?
No.
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 Yes. I mean, no.
Two no's from Wiggum first, and then yes.
Wiggum has a lot of Tron shame.
Don't let me talk too long about Tron.
The Tron flop, I mean, yes. And it was considered to be a bad movie, too.
Mm-hmm. It's... I said the same thing about Tron Legacies. Like, is it good? You should see it. It's awesome. Is it any good? No.
Yeah, I mean, no. I do like Kate Beckinsale. I don't like her playing a sexy baby woman.
Oh, no, wait, that's not her.
Oh, it's not Kate Beckinsale?
No, it's Olivia Wilde.
That's Wilde. Right, okay.
But she's also nice.
And that CG doesn't hold up at all.
The CG Jeff Bridges.
Oh, no. But Tron, I love the history of Tron. We were in Olympic time. You ever see Animal Olympics? I love that cartoon back then.
No. It's too sexy.
That is an inside joke in the laser time world that if you ask somebody if they've seen something...
No.
Then you have to say no like three
Wiggum,
times.
Too.
Like, no.
Now.
But what's his name? Steven? I need to get his name. The guy he made, how did that work? He was contracted by NBC to make two summer and winter animal cartoons. Animal Olympics.
Oh, okay.
And they canceled the summer Olympics. So like most people didn't get to see it. If you were a little kid with HBO in the 80s, like it ran a lot because it was like a cartoon without a home. Pretty good. Billy Crystal's a voice in it.
Sure.
And that somehow that got the guy to work on Tron.
It's
like the most notable thing ever, going from animals in the Olympics, like hyper 70s animation, to Tron. And Tron is something that I think everybody has heard about but hasn't really seen.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, Disney kind of didn't want you to see it for a very long time.
But nerds loved it.
They barely made it available, and then they decided they'd make a sequel to it, which is just like, but you didn't foster enough nostalgia for it by letting us see it enough.
Because that sequel was greenlit and shot and made about 6 months before they acquired Marvel and Star Wars. You will never see Tron again, because Disney does not need to tackle that audience with that property ever again. But it was a really magical thing for people a little older than me.
Yeah.
Like when you...
Our buddy Dan Amrick, who is a little bit older than us, he loves his Flynn Arcade T-shirt.
I have the soundtrack on vinyl. It's fucking excellent. And what I really love about it, when Tron came out and Disney said they were making it, their animators went apeshit. Like, this is gonna replace us, and like, calm the fuck down. Nothing's gonna replace you. You're fine. And for 20 years they were right.
Yeah.
And now we find out. Yeah, it is gonna replace you, but like 3 decades.
Time. It's the same deal of like. Well, cable is being replaced by the internet, just not overnight. Like, it's death of a thousand cuts.
It did replace you, but at the around the point you were going to retire.
But I just love,
No.
Just use it in your life, kids.
But once a year, I do like to get real baked and watch Tron. It's so much fun that way.
It is an entertaining film. I've never probably watched it all the way through without commercials. I think I've only seen it on TV.
Gotta get
with
that Blu-ray. It looks so good.
I think the game Discs of Tron is not bad for what it is.
Hey, there's Tron 2.0. Yeah. Tron has some good games.
Sure.
The original arcade game I played a lot. And...
So we get to find out about the third dimension.
Told you not
to
talk about Tron.
Here is an ordinary square. Whoa, slow down, Egghead. But suppose we extend the square beyond the two dimensions of our universe along the hypothetical Z-axis there. This forms a three-dimensional object known as a cube, or a frinkahedron, in honor of its discoverer. Hey.
Help me!
Are you helping me, or are you going on and on?
Oh, right, and of course, within, we find the doomed individual.
Doomed individual. I really love the idea of 2D cartoon characters being horrified by the idea of a three-dimensional object. They just can't handle it.
I love that. And also, Frink... Frank here is 8,000% Farnsworth. Like, this is just, this is all Farnsworth does, except he's just older. But it's the same deal of, like, time to explain a thing that I'm interested in.
They're doomed.
Yeah, you know, it's like, no, you're definitely dead.
And also, Frank has an advanced degree in hyperbolic topology, which is a great joke. A great joke.
I also love the gag of Lisa turning off the light as he says the third dimension. When she says sorry, it's like a season two kind of squiggly smile she's got there. It's stuff that they would not let go in the animation usually there. Then we get another quick Abe joke of him being 100 years old.
With his old, like, Big Daddy diving
somebody
costume.
Somebody work the bellows. And then Bart dives in, which, when I first watched this, I was like, we're going to get to see Bart in CG 2? Oh, boy!
That was a surprise because, you know, being 13 or whatever, I was savvy enough to be like, yes, this is expensive. We're just going to get Homer. And then when Bart jumps in, it's like, holy shit, they got Bart in there, too.
But the marketing didn't reveal that either.
Yeah, it was a real extra treat. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. And Bart's plan to save him is not very good.
But... No, it sucks.
I can't get any closer. You'll have to jump.
Piece of cake, son.
He doesn't even try to jump. He takes it like a half
he just
step.
Kind of dives into the hole.
Yeah, he does it on purpose. But it's just so beautiful the way Bart, like, also, when there's no ground anymore, the way Bart kind of wiggles in air and is then pulled back.
I like how he sucked back into the 2D world.
And that they CG animated that rope, and it moved pretty good for rope, I have to say.
Don't look too hard at the top of Bart's head, though.
No, it's
frightening.
It looks like a bowl of nachos.
Well, as a kid, I loved my Bart toys, but I also would stare at him like, how does this work? It's just a ton of little cones on top of his head. So then we get to the ending here, which is kind of cute, kind of funny.
Bart, what happened?
Well, we hit a little snag when the universe sort of collapsed on itself. But Dad seemed cautiously optimistic. Homie!
Be strong, Marge. I'm sure he's gone to a better place. This is the worst place yet.
Oh my God, look at this. Oh, mommy, oh, dear. Oh, my. Oh.
Ooh, erotic cakes.
So this new universe has erotic cakes, so it's all fine.
Homer's going to be okay.
And that's even more visually impressive.
Yeah.
3D CGI in the real world. Sorry, Chris.
And like Bart coming in, that was one more thing we didn't expect. Like, we knew we were going to have Homer in a CG world, but not bring Homer into our world.
Homer into our world, he is reflected in the window to erotic cakes, which is also like a little thing they didn't have to do. Nobody would have judged them for not animating a shadow on him.
Yeah,
or
not trying to shame you people for not being around in 1995. I'm just trying to express how fucking magical this... an episode I was already going to love no matter what they did.
This is Grandpa explaining the radio.
Yes. It was everybody loved the radio.
The sound would come across the airwaves and you'd hear it.
I will say I just watched a funny... Patrick Stewart SNL sketch about erotic cakes.
I love that sketch.
Of an episode I prepared, of Laser Time I prepared for you guys.
Oh, it was all like
just
asses,
last night.
Right?
No, all women going to the bathroom.
Oh, all women going to the bathroom.
So, if you want to visit...
women going to the bathroom.
If you want to visit...
Sexy is.
If you want to visit the erotic cake store... Go to 13567 Ventura Boulevard in Sherman Oaks, California. At the time, it was a photography store. It is now a cafe called The Coffee Roaster.
Okay.
So on our Simpsons field trip, we can visit that place, too.
All right.
We have an erotic cake store like a block away, but it's like one of those things I've never seen open and just assuming it's a front for something.
It's got to be.
Who really wants an erotic cake? Like, really? Like, that has to be a very small market.
You tell me erotic pies, I'm in.
I wonder if I got a job at that erotic cake store or something in our universe.
I don't know, really, stick my face in it.
But so, this is the first live action ever filmed for The Simpsons.
It's true.
In a regular episode. Springfield's Most Wanted does not count.
It doesn't. And David Merkin directed this?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he got a crane. Mm-hmm. He managed to get a crane out of the budget for that shot.
I love that on the commentary is so clear of like, Fox could not have been more unhelpful. They really sucked. They did not want to spend any money on
this show. And I love that you can see in the shot it was done so haphazardly. The crane kind of bobs a little bit.
Yeah.
And you look in the background, you can see a bunch of pissed off people stopped in traffic. When the crane starts moving, you can see the cars start moving.
And you can see the cones as well for when they blocked off part of the street.
Oh, I didn't see that.
It's something that like in a real live action production, you would have done it again.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the point.
But David Merkin had filmed actual movies, so he knows what it's like to work with a real crane. Mm-hmm. But that's also, I now see after rewatching Little Girl Lost, is it also ends with a crane up from street. So I wonder if that was an intentional connection to the Twilight Zone. But the music is beautiful. That's going to be the music taking us out.
It's really great.
Episode.
And one last thing I want to say is Oakley and Weinstein were so proud of this segment, and rightfully so. They submitted this episode for the Emmy, and they lost to the Pinky and the Brain Christmas special, which is also a very good episode of Pinky and the Brain.
Which one is that?
It's just the Christmas special.
I get mad when I hear it. I'm tired of saying it in front of both of you. The WB took those cartoons away from me. I've never seen Pinky and the Brain.
It's a gorgeous Christmas special. It's also moving, but they have so many regrets about this, and Oakley says we should have nominated Mother Simpson. Emmy voters will not vote for a Halloween thing. They're all old and crusty. They're not going to vote for some scary thing.
Especially one with CGI and blood. But if they have one about warm feelings for your mom, they would have voted for that.
I think it would have won.
Though, the Emmy voters might have just been like, Simpsons always wins. Let's give it to somebody else.
That could
also have been going against them.
They missed a few Emmys.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Last year, Will Vinton lost it.
But last year it was Lisa's Wedding that won.
Yeah. Again, a heartstring puller. Which this one was not, but man, this was a good treehouse.
Yes, thanks for hanging in with us. We haven't podcasted in a while, so we forgot how it works. We just enjoy talking.
We haven't been on mic since the live show, so So thanks for coming out to that, everybody.
Hear that on the Patreon and in the free feed as well.
Yes, and thank you so much for listening, folks. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts, a classic gaming podcast. Look for Retronauts in your podcast device or go to Retronauts.com. We've been around for 11 years, so I say find a topic that interests you and download that episode, and you probably will like it if you like me. And if you don't like me, work on yourself. Goodbye.
Have you done a missed episode yet?
No, Jeremy has.
Okay. Yeah.
It's one of those games. It's so fucking important, but it sucks.
It does not age well.
It bored the shit out of me.
I didn't get to say this in the missed rant. It masqueraded itself as educational. It's like the only game my parents bought me. Like, God damn it.
So you can follow this show on patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, which is home to tons of exclusive things that are almost too hard to list, but going to give it a try here.
Do you have an interview with Dana Gould?
We have our live show with Dana Gould. Oh. We have our second live show where we talked about Homer's best job. We did every episode of the first season of Talking Simpsons exclusively there. We have all of our season wrap-ups, which you can listen to.
Do you look at deleted scenes?
Our deleted scene specials as well.
Doing
every episode of Talking Critic from the beginning.
Oh.
And soon we'll be starting Talking Futurama, which I think you guys are going to really enjoy. We also have a third podcast we're getting ready to start up soon, which will be available a week early and ad-free, just like this show is. And if you're a premium subscriber, you get access to one video a month, including me and Bob going over every short of The Simpsons in order, and you can watch it along with us. And we've got some other really cool interviews are coming, but in the past, not on top of Dana Gould, we also have Bill Oakley, Mimi Pond, Mike Scully, Paul Provenzano, and Reed Harrison, all folks who had worked on The Simpsons in one way or another. You learned so much from those.
I'd be stupid not to donate.
Yeah, come on.
I feel like I've plugged the LaserTime Patreon too many times in one episode. That's also there.
Get that Elm Street Nightmare podcast.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And then we're watching all the Clerks cartoons and doing commentaries for a lot of Kevin Smith movies.
Wow, all six of them.
Yeah. I can't believe we had the balls to do it.
No, I think that's great.
I had to steal the easy bait before you guys did.
Bear is driving. And there's tons of Halloween-y classic episodes of Laser Time. Monster Parties is obviously my favorite, but there's lots of great ones.
I liked Facts About Dracula and no one else did. did. Facts about Dracula. At that recording, and I think it's 2 years ago, there was still one person left alive from the Bela Lugosi Dracula movie. And she was in a movie that year.
Holy cow.
Indeed. LaserTimePodcast.com. We also do 30-20-10. We look 30, 20, and 10 years in the past. Somewhat recently, we had to discuss the airing of that 90s show. Mm. And my feelings on it have cooled a little bit. I hope yours have too. Video Game Apocalypse, our weekly video game show. We do a bonus show every week. You guys have been on a ton talking about wrestling and other things. Bob and Henry have been on Bonus Time before. Mm-hmm. And that's
Japan, my trip to Japan.
Trip to Japan. And that's exclusive for patrons at patreon.com/lasertime.
That's cool.
Oh, and if I may adjust our begging for money too, I should mention I just had a wedding, so you know, if you wanted to get a nice gift for old Henry, a Patreon sign up is always a good gift.
Yeah, I agree. So thanks so much for listening to this King Size episode. We'll see you next week for King Size Homer.
What this means? The next time you fall asleep, we could die.
Meh, welcome to my world.